major college scholarship. He played linebacker at TCU, starting 2 games and getting playing time in 7 others. But after a sprained knee, he dropped down on the depth chart his sophomore season. The knee got better, but his relationship with the position coach apparently did not. He went down to 3rd string. He was insulted, and having watched him play in high school, I could understand why. I've never sat on the bench a day in my life. So he quit and left school. He got an associate's degree at Odessa College. He worked at the Midland International Airport doing maintenance, then for the State of Texas Aircraft Pooling Board in Austin. Like his father, he became a trucker. Lucky if he was home 3 days a week. Now he delivers nitrogen in-state to places like Amarillo and El Paso. He's living the trucker's dream, working weekdays and home every night. I wasn't surprised. Ivory had always known what he wanted and what he did not, even if nobody else did. In 2009, he married a woman he had known since he was 15. They have a 6-year-old named Ivy. Now I get it. He wraps his arms around her. For a man who played with such physicality on the football field and could be so reticent off of it, he always had a gentle soul. He looks like he can still play linebacker for TCU. He's stable and content. I stay in my bubble, my little shell. I ask him why he never returned my phone calls. I knew if you really wanted to find me, you would. The ambivalence of Ivory. So, are you happy to see me? He pauses. I am happy to see you. I don't stay very long. He's not a man of many words, and even fewer now. He actually seems disappointed. That's it? That's it. He says he wants to show me something before I leave. We turn a corner into the dining area. There, on the near wall, is an intricate collage in a large black frame. It has been carefully conceived and constructed by Ivory himself. In the middle is the letter jacket he wore. There are 11 patches down the leather sleeves commemorating Permian's playoff appearances when he was on the team. There is the number he wore, 62, with a football in between. There is a large P for Permian. At the bottom is the front cover of the hardback edition of Friday Night Lights. In the adjoining panel is the page showing a picture taken of him. I didn't think the book mattered much to him, which is why I chuckle as I head towards Dallas and my final destination. Maybe he wasn't so ambivalent after all. You did great, baby. It's initially odd seeing Don Billingsley in his business casual attire, looking like he's just walked out of the pages of GQ, or at least reads the magazine carefully. Crisp slacks, collared shirt, fine shoes with a slightly narrow toe, not a hair out of place, still close to his playing weight. What the? Don had been a renegade in the book, a sidewinder. When everybody else was mouthing the company line, I always went to Don for the real deal. He gave it to me. But Don was on the edge as a teenager. It was hard not to think that wherever he wound up, it was not going to be good. He drank, he drugged, he regarded life with devilish disdain. I could never see him turning it around, which is why I've also learned that the worst predictor of future behavior is high school behavior. Don enrolled at East Central University in Ada, Oklahoma after graduation. There didn't seem to be much change until a friend from Permian committed suicide. Then he knew. I just asked God to come into my life and forgive my sins and take charge because I wasn't in control. It changed my life. It was the only thing that could have. He graduated from East Central in 1993 and got his master's from the school in human resources in 1995. For several years, he worked for an insurance company in Oklahoma City that ran an employee assistance program. In April 1999, he married Melanie Fannin, who worked in the corporate office of Southwest Airlines in Dallas. He moved there to join her. Today, he works for the California-based company Protivity as a healthcare consultant. His gift is for dealing with clients and telling them what they should do in such a personable style. They actually do it. He lives in a beautiful home on a corner lot in the Dallas suburb of Hickory Creek with a winding staircase, with professional photographic portraits of their three kids creeping up the far wall. The neighborhood is one of those in which, if an unfamiliar car driving down the street is neither a well-trimmed pickup nor an Audi, the police SWAT team may well be on the way to ask a few questions. I ask Don if he regrets the book given the rogue portrait. He tells me he doesn't, because the epilogue showed him turning his life around. Melanie feels differently. She didn't make it through because the Don she read about was not the person she ever knew. Don seems quite serious now. He talks in a way that's still friendly, but also careful and measured. Every now and then, you still see that sublime twinkle in the eye, particularly when he talks about the bond he has made with his co-workers and their penchant for impromptu wrestling while traveling together. Melanie tells me that he sometimes comes home with bruises, a healthcare consulting version of Fight Club. Where the old Don shows up, the one I found so alive, is in his 11-year-old daughter, Landry. She's the kind of spirit who, when you take her picture, gives an outrageous grin and the thumbs-up sign on both thumbs. She oozes confidence. Melanie is also quick to tell me that Landry has inherited his athleticism. At about 7 p.m., we go to see Landry at gymnastic practice at the Denton Gymnastic Academy. She's ranked second overall in the state in her age grouping. She practices 3 hours a day after school, and Don has tried to instill in her the mental toughness he learned at Permian. Those off-season workouts, which one former player said were harder than U.S. Marine boot camp, have had their residual reward. We watch as she practices on the beam, then does a series of fearless vaults on the floor exercise in her purple leotard. Her joy and comfort can be felt from a million miles. Don is something of a disciplinarian as a father, which is probably why his three children, Skyler and Landry and Riggs, have the best manners this side of the border. "You did great, baby," Don whispers to her. We have dinner afterward at a taco place in Denton. I order something called the Ridiculously Big Taco, or the Very Serious Taco, or something big and serious. I am not disappointed. I down every ridiculously big and very serious inch of it in record time. Sometimes I eat because I'm anxious. Sometimes I overeat because I know I'm in exactly the place I was meant to be. I won't make a trip like this again. The next major anniversary of Friday Night Lights is the 50th, and I assume I'll be dead or deserving of it. I love Texas, but this is the last time I'm going to spend a week driving through it. There was talk of a reunion and keeping in touch along the way. No promise is more easily broken, yet it doesn't matter. Don and I walk out into the parking lot after dinner. We hug. I think I see his eyes glisten after we disengage. But your perception plays tricks when you're hoping for something. So probably, they are just my own. Buzz Bissinger, May 2015. The End. This is Tom Steckschulte. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Friday Night Lights, A Town, A Team, and A Dream by H.G. Bissinger. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So look for us at your public library or on download sites online.